Greetings and welcome to Jesse I Interviews. As always, I'm producing this podcast on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation, and I want to pay my respects to them and all other First Nations people around this land, which is now known as Australia, but which was never ceded. This episode features an interview that is quite special to me, because it's actually the first interview I ever conducted, way back in 1998. I still remember how nervous I was leading up to it. It was recorded via telephone late at night at the RMIT student radio station SRAFM, which later became SYNFM. I believe I did this one primarily for a street press article at the time. Wasn't actually intended for radio. It features a legend of UK reggae and dub music, the Mad Professor. A pretty good choice for a first interview when I think about it. He's a very humble and down-to-earth person who's very easy to talk to. As regular listeners would know, I like to present interviews here completely unedited, even including the casual talking before and after the official part of the interview. But in this case, I sadly do not have it. In fact, all I have of this interview are three clips from it, which I must have edited out to play on the radio at some point. So you won't even hear the usual intros and outros, or the usual questions like where were you born and what was life for you growing up. But let's get straight into it. Jesse I interviews Mad Professor back in 1998. This is a huge question, but for the uninitiated, how would you describe what you do?
What I do is anything at any time. What I do is a variety of things. I'm a mixer, I'm a producer, I run a label, I think up ideas to get the best out of music, you know?
Right.
I guess a kind of musical innovator, I guess, you know.
Okay.
Other thing, yeah.
Going way back to your childhood, I understand. How did you get the name Mad Professor?
Well, I used to, when most kids would be playing with football and cricket, I would be there with wires building things and, you know,
right.
Different gadgets, you know?
I heard you built your own radio when you were quite young.
Yeah, I built my first radio when I was around 10.
How does a kid just sit down and build a radio?
Well, you know, it first started with me being curious about how a radio worked. I mean, the radio in our household was the most technical device, you know, growing up
okay.
In the 60s. You know, this was a real phenomenon. And I couldn't believe such a thing existed as a radio, so I tried to open the back of the radio to see how it worked.
Okay.
And I saw a load of bulbs, tubes with lights on, and I started to probe around, and I got licks for it, you know, I got licks, you know.
Got in trouble?
I got in trouble for it because I was damaging the big centerpiece of the household, which was the radio.
Right.
I know it's hard to believe in 1998, you know. But then after that, my curiosity continued, and I thought, well, let me find out how this thing works. So I got some books, and I just tried and tried until I got myself a radio.
Excellent.
That worked, a crystal radio with a one transistor amplification, and it was exciting, man.
Okay, so and now you're at the point where you own the biggest black-owned recording studio in England, is that right?
Yeah. Well, you know, even not the real thing is like an evolution, because you know it didn't start out to be that, you know, it didn't.
Right.
You know. It's just an idea. I had to build a studio, and, you know, at first, you know, it was a joke to most people. Then it started to work.
Right.
And it became a serious joke.
A serious joke.
Yeah.
So it was in your house for the start?
Yes, I built it in my front room. I started it in 1979, and by 1980, 81, we were releasing records.
Excellent. And now you've released over 200 records, is that right?
Yeah, man, loads.
Okay.
Loads of singles and loads of albums as well, you know.
Are there any albums which stand out as being particularly memorable for you, or which you're most proud of?
Well, a series of albums I'm quite proud of, you know. I mean, I'm proud of the first one because I thought, well, you know, let me put this together, and I gradually got it together how I wanted it.
Right.
And it was like a concept of album, Dub Me Crazy.
Right. The first one.
Yeah, first one. Very, very exciting.
Excellent.
I mean, but other highlights of the albums is things like the first Pato Banton album, Mad Professor Captures Pato Banton.
Right.
You know, very exciting album. The Maccabee album, Sign of the Times.
Right.
Great album.
Excellent.
The first Uroy album as well, which is called True Born African.
Okay.
So they're all real stunning moments.
Oh, definitely. And you've done a lot of work with Lee Perry as well.
Yeah, man. Yep.
I once heard a rumor that he was sleeping at your studio after his wife kicked him out of home. Is that story true?
Yeah, it's not a rumor. It's true. What happened, he came in to record. This is when we were recording the Black Ark Experiments album.
Right. Very good album.
Yeah. That was maybe around 94, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had an argument, and then, you know, they had a fight, and she kind of disappeared out of the country, and he got stuck, you know?
Right.
He had no passport or nothing and nowhere to live. So, yeah, he had to be staying at my place. He stayed at my place for maybe 3 or 4 months until they reconciled, you know?
Okay.
And, yeah, it's... The place bore the hallmarks of the visit.
I'm sure it did. The Upsetter and the Mad Professor together at once. It's a good combination.
Yeah.
I like the... you just released the Dub Fire album and the Fire in Dub with Lee Perry.
Yeah.
How are those ones going?
Yeah, they're going fine, you know. We tried a different song this time from... You know, we thought we'd go back to a kind of 70s.
Okay.
Song, you know?
It's more funky too, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Soulful feel, you know?
Right. How much of a debt do you think the modern dance world and electronic world has to dub reggae?
I think quite a lot, because, you know, guys like King Tubbies, they were the first ones to, like, use what was termed in the 70s as excessive use of effects and ancillary equipment.
Right.
You know. Before, people just had these things sitting in the studio just looking pretty and not really working them to their extreme, but, you know.
Okay.
Tubbies was like using every aspect of a reverb you could, you know.
Right, playing the mixing board like an instrument.
Yeah, man, that's it. You know, it's like you have a house and it's got 10 rooms and you only use one room in it. That's how it was in general, you know.
Okay.
Before Tubbs started, you know.
So with the dub me crazy stuff, you seem to like using bizarre effects in there and kind of shocking the listener there.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that come from?
Well, I guess it's part of that concept to push effects to their extremities, you know?
Okay.
Have them belting out, have them talking.
Right, okay.
Yeah, man.
And what about the Black Liberation dub? What's the concept behind that series?
Concept behind that is just to make a powerful album that's not so crazy with effects, but more like taking a listener into a kind of militant mood. Yeah, man, you know, but dub all the same, you know?
Yeah, some heavy roots in there. I love that stuff.
Yeah, man, very heavy roots.
And one thing I notice on a lot of the latest releases, you've got the warbler effect, where you describe it as the bass sounds like it's walking out of the speakers.
Mm-hmm.
I love that one. How did you find that effect?
Well, I thought one day I'd go back to my electronic things. I came up with this thing, you know. I thought, okay, let's work it and see how it goes, see how people like it. And so far, it's getting a good response. You know?
I reckon. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and it's kind of unique. From you hear that on a record, you know it, you know.
I've heard no other reggae that sounds like that, that's for sure. Especially it stands out really well on the Chucky Starr album. I love that.
Yeah. I must admit, that was the first album that had it, you know, and it certainly went with it. It had even people in the reggae market who aren't so adventurous normally. Mm-hmm. It had them kind of saying, yeah, that's interesting, you know.
Chucky Starr, he's a real great young Sing Jay. Sounds a bit like Capleton, I think.
Yeah, man. He's really popular in London. He's like the most popular DJ right now, Sing Jay.
Excellent.
London. And, you know, he's like, he's doing great things. People like him a lot, you know.
So you've accomplished so much already. You know, what is in store for you? What is there anything else that you feel like you've got to do in the future? Or?
Loads. If I don't, I might as well stop. Yeah, man, you just have to do what you have to do, you know. You get inspiration every day, you know. Every day you get ideas and inspiration. You just have to keep at it, you know.
So you're constantly busy cranking them out.
Yeah, man, loads of ideas, you know. Never quite enough hours in a day to execute all the ideas. But, you know, I'm working at it.
Excellent.
Mad Professor speaking to me there way back in 1998. I really wish I could find that entire interview, but sadly it appears to be lost to the ether, along with several other interviews from the past. I do remember at one point, Prof must have been eating something, as his answers sounded like he had a mouthful of food, and I was a bit annoyed at the time, just quietly. I get it now, though. The poor guy probably had hours of back-to-back promo interviews that day, as I think this one was actually organised by a publicity company. He was probably just trying to get a snack in. That's it for this one, but I should mention that Mad Professor is here in Australia this month of March, so if you're listening to this while it's fresh off the press, so to speak, check him out. Big thanks as always to my Patreon supporters, the Dons Armagedian Time and Rasta Tony, the Real General Empress Irie, me Idrin Tom Tanaki, and me Chargy DJ Poblito. Thank you very much for listening. Eyes is every time.